Good morning. You're tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, with CU Boulder open for in-person classes, the university has already reported an uptick in COVID-19 cases. Now, those cases might be lower among dorm students, thanks to screenings that are happening regularly at residence halls. They're spotting cases before there are even symptoms. But what about the thousands of students who live off campus? We'll hear how the college is dealing with that. Then, with the wildfire smoke in the air so heavily over the weekend, we'll revisit an interview from an air quality researcher from CU about the impact on our health. After that, art in the era of COVID-19. We'll hear about Creativity Alive. It's a community-based arts organisation, and they've been gathering on Saturdays and Sundays at the Holiday Park in Boulder for a series of concerts, dances and artistic expression. After headlines from the BBC and a commentary from Jim Hightower, Frank Dabowski is your host for A Public Affair. This morning he speaks with the chair of the board of directors of the Boulder Valley School District. Then at 9 o'clock, as always on Monday mornings, it is media analysis from Counterspin, before we start another morning of music on the Morning Sound Alternative at 9:30. But first we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
A proposal by a working group of the Boulder Valley School District is recommending that kindergartners and first and second graders have the option to return to in-person learning by the end of this month. The district began the school year remotely for all students. The Daily Camera reports that the working group comprising administrators, teachers, and parents has been meeting remotely since mid-August. Superintendent Sam Messier said that it's very hard to serve these students in an online environment. And Terry Mulford, the head of the Boulder Valley Education Association, said that they recognize the urgency for providing in-person experiences for these students, and they want to avoid creating gaps in their learning. The goal is for K through 2 students to attend school in person 4 days a week, with Monday reserved for teacher preparation. Parents would continue to have the option of online learning for their young children. The working group was expected to make its recommendations in a couple of weeks, but is moving these proposals forward now and will present them at Tuesday's school board meeting. Yesterday, Boulder County reported 65 new coronavirus cases with no new deaths. The Daily Camera reports it's the single highest day increase so far in the county. The previous high was recorded on June 18th when 50 cases were reported in one day. The number of new cases from CU Boulder is not clear because its online dashboard was not updated yesterday, and it won't be updated today because of the holiday. On Saturday, the university announced 49 new positive coronavirus cases, bringing the total to more than 100 since the fall semester began and 87 since it announced it had detected the virus in wastewater testing in 4 dorms. More than 100 students rallied outside East High School Friday, calling for changing what they say is a rape culture in the Denver public schools. CBS 4 reports that the protest for change comes after allegations of sexual assault surfaced last week against several East High School students. The police and the district are investigating those matters. Some of those attending the protest said there have been countless stories of students in various schools across the district who have been sexually assaulted by other students. Valerie Bowden, well, a senior at DSST Byers, said she thinks it's a rape culture and what's happening to girls is being normalized. The students are calling for education, such as mandatory classes about consent. They plan to continue protesting this week until changes are made. On Saturday, family, friends, and community members came together to hold a vigil at the state capitol, asking for justice for a Senegalese family killed in an August house fire in the Green Valley Ranch of Denver. Denver 7 reports that police believe the fire was set intentionally. The 5 people who died were immigrants: Jibril Diol, his wife Adja, their daughter Khadija, his sister Hassan, and his niece Hawa Bai perished when fire roared through their home last month. Police released a photo showing 3 people wearing masks and hoods who believe they ignited the deadly blaze. The family's attorney, Kasir Muhammad Bai, called it one of the worst crimes in Denver history. Denver Police Chief Paul Pazin said that they will not rest until they bring justice to the family, the Senegalese community, and the people of Denver. The Cameron Peak Fire continued to grow this weekend, prompting new evacuation orders for homes and businesses in the western Larimer County area. As of Sunday evening, the fire had consumed more than 34,000 acres and is 5% contained. Rocky Mountain National Park announced that Trail Ridge Road closed at 3 p.m. yesterday because of potential heavy smoke and low visibility. A forecast of a foot of snow falling on Tuesday near the fire won't help extinguish the blaze as much as some hope. CBS 4 News reports that the experts say the heavy snow likely won't be enough to drastically improve firefighting conditions. The steep terrain is covered so heavily with dry material that a day of snow likely won't be enough. The Cameron Peak Fire produced a huge plume of smoke that filtered over the Front Range throughout yesterday, with ash falling in the metro area. There's a winter weather advisory in effect tomorrow through Wednesday noon as a massive cold front arrives after sunset tonight. Today, highs will be in the low 90s with areas of smoke and an air quality alert. The change starts this afternoon when it will become windy with strong gusts. The overnight low will be about 32. Tomorrow, rain early in the morning will turn to snow with accumulation of from 3 to 7 inches and a high temperature around 32. On Wednesday, it looks like there will be snow and then rain. Thursday, partly sunny and a chance of rain. By Friday, sunny skies return with highs in the upper 60s. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. CU Boulder has been open for in-person classes for only a few weeks. Last week, the university reported an uptick in COVID-19 cases among students. While some of those cases did come from CU's 6,000 residence hall students, it's the 25,000 students who live off campus who account for the vast majority of CU's COVID cases. Now, those cases might be lower among dorm students thanks to residence hall screenings that spot the cases before there are symptoms. Those early warning screenings include wastewater surveillance of each dorm at CU Boulder. As for the higher COVID case count among off-campus students, much of that seems linked to large illegal off-campus parties, especially parties that happened 2 weeks ago, and they might be tempting for students to do again, particularly over the Labor Day weekend. Well, for more, KGNU's Shelley Schlender spoke with CU spokesperson Candice Smith.
There were large parties which were out there in the public, got attention off campus. And we did see one larger gathering on campus that first week of school. And now, logically, 2 weeks later, we're starting to see the cases come in. The other thing that happened this week is that several of our dorms, the wastewater sewage testing, which is testing for virus loads in the wastewater, gave us the early detection we were hoping for. So we sent out several notices to residence hall residents that they needed to come in and get one of our screening tests as part of our monitoring process.
How are the students responding to this idea that their poop is revealing something to the world about their dorm's COVID-19 status?
The students really have been good, especially the ones living on campus. Some of them were a little unnerved. They were a little freaked out because they were told, oh, you got to show up for this test. The wastewater is positive for showing the viruses in your dorm. So some of them were a little unnerved. We sent out another communication today, not only the students, but the families, basically saying, this is a good thing. This is early detection. We just want to make sure that if your dorm, your res hall, is testing positive, you definitely need to get a test for that week. That seemed to calm people down. I mean, we know this is challenging. We know this is not the experience in college that they expected. And we just appreciate their cooperation.
When you said that some of them were freaked out, was it just because there might be COVID in their building, or was it because they felt like when they flushed the toilet, that's a private matter between them and the toilet?
It was more that it's COVID in their building and they're worried about getting COVID, or they may have COVID and they don't even know it.
Candace Smith, when you were in college, were you this careful with your social distancing as these students are being asked to do?
Yeah, we know it's tough. We know it's tough. But what they have told us is they really want to stay here. And the other thing is that when we've asked them, including the fraternities and sororities, if we were to go fully remote, would you go home? And the answer is no. So they would stay here in the community. So we would like to keep them as occupied as possible and in classes and, you know, keep them busy with their studies so they're not occupied by other things. We are feeling really quite frankly proud of the research that's taken place in a short order, our monitoring efforts, you know, from ventilation to the wastewater to the screening and the diagnostic tests. I mean, if you think that this has really just happened in a matter of months, it's really, I think, a Herculean effort on the part of, you know, faculty, staff, and students, also just with compliance on what the guidelines are. And, you know, keep in mind, like the state oversees us, if they didn't think we had a good plan, they would shut us down, right? And the county would shut us down, and they could still shut us down, but right now it's working.
You got to hand it to the students. It's natural for them to want to socialize. This is the time where students get their best friends for life. This is the time where they learn about love and a few other things as well. And they have to be much more cautious about it this year.
Yeah. And in fact, we've had to, this is just not here. This is statewide. We're hearing about increases in demands for mental health, increase in suicides because of isolation. So, you know, we're doing things too, like we've had greater demands for mental health services, so we're stepping up that. We're trying to offer different ways they can connect. I mean, so for a club, instead of actually meeting in person, they're doing Zoom meetups or different types of classes. I mean, for anybody who's actually been to college, this is like a, oh God, this is so depressing. But for a lot of our first year students, they don't know what college really is like. So I'd say that they're actually adapting, and a lot of them are just quite frankly glad to be away from home, and they're glad to be here.
Thanks to Shelley Schlender for that report. We've been hearing from CU Boulder spokesperson Candace Smith about how things are going as CU Boulder is reopening for in-person classes and hopes to stay open in the time of COVID-19. Now, if you would like to learn more about the science of CU Boulder's new dorm screening for COVID that involves wastewater testing, tune in tomorrow morning for the KGNU Science Show, How on Earth. They've been doing a multi-part series taking a look at how CU is handling reopening amidst COVID, but also some of the research that is being done on campus as well. So tune in tomorrow morning for that at 8:30 a.m. Well, during this summer, we have seen most of the traditional events, whether it's the Boulder, whether it's Creek Fest, so many things have been cancelled because of the COVID-19 pandemic. But at the same time, we've also seen other creative ideas being sparked to keep people engaged, like some of the things that we've covered here on KGNU, drive-in concerts, chalk street festivals, mural festivals, virtual concerts, and many more things. However, still people miss gathering together. Well, Creativity Alive is a community-based arts organization, and they've been striving to keep people gathering together, albeit socially distanced. And they have been gathering on Saturdays and Sundays at the Holiday Park in Boulder for a series of concerts, dances, and artistic expression. KGNU's Rosanna Longo spoke with Marilyn Hugh Holmes about how art could help people navigate isolation and economic social concerns during the COVID-19 pandemic.
As you can well imagine, with the pandemic, that rather derailed us, and all of our events had to be put on hold or canceled, or we tried to transform them. It's taken us a few months, but finally this summer, we've gotten back to that point of, okay, we need to do the things we love as a community, as individuals, as musicians, as artists, as dancers, and we need to do them in ways that are exquisitely safe that we keep everyone in our beloved community safe. And we use these events to really nourish each other, to bring that nourishment that we need ourselves and we know the larger community needs to get us through this pandemic, to help us navigate the isolation and the social distancing and the health concerns and the economic and the social concerns. We have been hosting a series of music and dance and art in the parks with Creativity Alive. And right now we're doing these every Saturday evening before nightfall. We're following the sun and holding them earlier and earlier as the sun sets earlier. And we're bringing people together in ways that are safe and so full of joy. So touched that you asked me to speak about this week, because as a single mom with my 13-year-old son who has begun this non-school schooling that we have going on throughout the country, throughout the world, really, I've just been so deeply, deeply reminded that more than ever, we need to deepen further into the ways of providing profound nourishment and joy to both myself and my son, and as the founder of Creativity Alive, to be able to provide that to all of the community and all the kindred spirits who are out there struggling with these various issues from the pandemic.
Why is it so urgent to keep on supporting the arts?
The arts are the greatest internal resource we have to be able to really find the ways to evolve as a human species. How do we navigate our way through the challenges of this time? And I think that the arts open us up in a way to each other and to whatever source there may be that can help us be resourced and grounded and find the ways to be absolutely clear on ourselves and open to the level of engagement that is needed in the world today. How do we stay fully resourced, and how do we stay fully engaged in the social, in the political, in the economic, in the medical crises that are going on right now? And the way to do that is to be fully resourced and in our own source of joy, so that we can then continue to engage and reach out and support others. Perhaps a silver lining of this pandemic is, personally, I felt at first there was this incredible loss of studio space and privacy and practice space. And slowly, slowly, it took me weeks before I started venturing into the public spaces. And initially this was at dawn, far away, when few people were there, and going to find out, what is my dance now? Where is my dance now? And it started very small. But the pandemic is making me work those edges. It is making me go out into public space. And now I'm at the point where I've been able to begin to share that. It's like, okay, this is a new dance that has been cultivated by this virus and the impact it's had on the planet. And it's helping me to do things that make my art form more and more accessible and more integrated into my whole life. It's not just closed off in a studio somewhere or with a small group of people who regularly meet 1 week in that studio. This is, we're in the public now, and the voices from the playground over there are part of the music. And the swallows swimming around my feet practically in the park are part of the dance. So this is the silver lining of the pandemic, of how it has helped many of us move into nature, move into public space, move into living a more integrated life where public and private art can become more more permeable. They're shared more.
That was Xinbong Xishan.
Hi, my name is James Hoskins. I'm a local musician. We've lived in Four Mile Canyon, west of Boulder, since 1991. And I've been a professional musician since about the mid-80s. You do the math. And up till March or so, I was playing gigs, flying around, doing shows in Seattle and other places. And then all of a sudden, my dance classes were canceled. The weekly music meditations at the library were canceled. They closed the library. And all the gigs, the venues closed, and we had nothing. And all of that time we spent being with other people and having them get the benefit of community and music and participating in sound. A lot of dance programs I played in for Balkan Middle Eastern dance, folk dance, and free dance and other things. People were no longer allowed to hold hands and dance in circles, and it hit pretty hard. I was pretty much emotional cardboard for a few weeks there, and eventually just started doing practices and a lot of yard work, and got a lot done outside and inside, both the house and myself. And then, thanks to Marilyn, who has persevered unbelievably so. She's been amazing at trying to provide outlets for us, and like here today, playing for live people, it's just such a gift. We're really pleased, Brian and I, to be here to play our instruments for you.
Well, concerts, dances, and creative expression will continue at the Holiday Park in Boulder on Saturday afternoons and Sunday mornings, even with the changing weather to come. And for details, you can go to the website creativityalive.org, creativityalive.org. And thanks to Rosanna Longo for that report. Well, as we heard in headlines, the Cameron Peak fire west of Fort Collins produced a huge plume of smoke over the weekend that filtered over the entire Front Range throughout yesterday. And we have experienced ash falling all throughout the metro area. Well, really, for the past several weeks, we have had smoke and hazy conditions as a result, not just of the Cameron Peak fire, but the numerous fires in Colorado, but also smoke coming from California. In the light of what we experienced over the weekend, I thought we should revisit part of an interview that we originally broadcast on August 20th with Christine Wiedemeyer, who's Associate Director for Science at the Cooperative Institute for Research in Environmental Sciences, or CIRES, at CU. She's an atmospheric scientist, and she studies wildfires and the impact of their emissions on air quality and climate.
All the haze that we see in the air right now, those are particles coming from this wildfire plumes, from the Cameron fire, from the one in Grand County, even the fires on the Western Slope and in Glenwood Springs. The smoke can make it all the way over here and impact us, those particles. Ozone, which we see, is a little bit trickier to tie back to purely the fires, only because ozone is created chemically in the atmosphere. It's not coming out of the plumes of the wildfires. It's created in the plumes and by other things in the air. So that one is a little bit more challenging. And even without the wildfire smoke, we would probably have ozone problems on these days, just because it's so hot, the air is stagnant. We have all the other pollutions from our cars and other sources that are causing ozone problems. So, but all those particles are really coming from the fires, all the haze that we see.
If we just talk about the haze from the fires then and its impact on air quality, this isn't the first summer that we've lived through these type of fires or this type of haze. So what kind of studies have been done to really show what kind of impact that kind of air quality or those particles in the air can actually have on either health, you know, quality of life? Like, what are some of the impacts that have been seen over the years now that we're seeing an increase in these types of wildfires?
Well, first and foremost, those particles can impact our health. They can impact our lungs because they're small. They can get breathed in and go deep in our lungs and have bad respiratory impacts. And then those particles have been shown to have other health or cause other health problems as well. And in fact, we have experts at CU that I can point you to that could talk more specifically about the health impacts. But we do know that those particles from wildfire smoke have a whole host of negative health outcomes. First and foremost are respiratory issues. We know we don't want to go outside and run around and exercise where we're breathing extra deeply and those particles can get even more deeply in our lungs. And then, you know, it causes the haze. It can cause changes in overall in our climate system. There's people that are studying that and the impacts on local weather, local climate, regional climate, even global climate. It can impact in certain ways depending on the size and the magnitude of the fire season.
There are the public health advisories that are being issued, the smoke advisory, the particulate advisories, of course, and there's the ozone advisories that we get regardless of the fires. Sometimes that could just become background noise because of maybe how it's presented or the frequency that we're getting so many of these advisories all the time. You know, so what would you say to people about protecting themselves, particularly now where, you know, very often ozone is invisible. It's not easy to see to the naked eye. However, we are seeing haze. We are seeing the smoke. So what would you say to people right now in terms of, you know, protecting themselves when it comes to what we're seeing right now with the degradation of the air quality because of the fires?
When you can see the smoke and particularly when you can smell it, I mean, I smell the Cameron fire smoke for multiple days this past weekend, that's when I know to stay inside. You're right. Ozone is a hard one. You can't see it. We don't know that it's really out there. It's a challenging thing to kind of conceptualize because it's a secondary pollutant. It's formed chemically. But with the wildfire smoke, we can see it. And when you see it, that's when you know to kind of lay low, protect your lungs, work out inside. Don't expose yourself, particularly if you are an at-risk population.
That's Christine Wiedenmeyer, Associate Director for Science at the Cooperative Institute for Research in Environmental Sciences, or CIRES, at CU. We spoke with her back in August, but as we have all experienced over the weekend, smoke from the Cameron Peak Fire is still with us.